about money.
Yeah, it started good.
Part of it is about if you have a blended family, what kind of money problems do you have? Part of it is about a big spender, married to somebody that's frugal. And this handout is just lots of situations where that might be occurring in your family, such as how much money do you give to adult children, which is kind of a dumb thing to say, but it's in there. And how do you compromise with budgets? What happens if one spouse controls all the finances and the other one is just maybe constantly anxious about do they have enough? So hopefully everybody has the handout, and we're kind of expecting you to read that on your own later, because it just covers so much that's pertinent today. Then just to give you a little background on most people's money ideas come from their family of origin. My father was a car dealer. It was a great year if he made $2,000. Of course, this obviously goes back a long way, but that was a wonderful year. When I was 12, I was working at Belk, making 50 cents an hour, putting shoes back, and eventually I worked my way up to 75 cents an hour, selling clothes. A button-down Oxford shirt cost $1.98. So lots of things have changed. A brand new Mustang in 1965, when I graduated from college, cost $2,500. $2,500. What an amazing change we've had in our country.
It's incredible.
So in my family, my father's obviously was dependent on how many cars he sold and how much repairs he did. So it seemed like we never had enough money. And the boys, three boys and a sister, we went to work as soon as we could. And we were already cutting lawns and trying to make money. We had this idea that we were going to save and go to college. Our parents had brainwashed us. Neither one of them had ever finished college. But it was like that's the next step after high school, you go to college. So we were being trained and taught to save money for college. And actually, in 1960, when I went to college, it cost $1,000 a year. That was everything. What a difference today. So the big issues in my home, my mother had this dream of building her home. And at night, she would sit in the Lazy Boy and she would have these blueprints. And she would redesign her home. The home I was born into, three boys and my father slept in one bedroom. And my mother and my sister slept in the other bedroom. Weird arrangement, but remember, when you're a kid, that just seems normal to you. But that was very weird. And so the home my mom dreamed about for years, she finally got that home when I was 14 years old. I was only there 4 years. My dad died when I was 20, so he lived in that home 6 years. So the waiting and waiting and waiting, trying to save enough money, was where all the problems came in. And my dad's dad died while he was in high school. So he dropped out of high school to run the repair shop. And then eventually he started an Oldsmobile dealership in our little small town. You want to tell about Tyler?
The Tyler story. I guess every family has a Tyler. My observation when Bill first took me home to meet the family, was that, you know, the whole family was there hanging out in the family room, and all of a sudden, I guess somebody figured out that Aunt Tyler was coming over. And I looked around me and I thought, where'd everybody go? I mean, they would all just leave, because it turned out that there was the black sheep of the family was Tyler. And so what would the scenario that happened is that Tyler had two children, no father around, and Bill's dad must have, I never met him because he died so young, no wonder he was so stressed. He was taking care of Tyler and her two kids and the mother. because Tyler would run out bills at the local small-town department store, B.C. Moore, and not be able to pay him. And his father would bail her out. Well, you know, one of my favorite verses is, and I guess they didn't share this one, is Philippians 2:2, about being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and in purpose. Well, I don't think that Bill's mom and dad ever talked about money and agreed on how much to spend on a new house or on helping other people, because there was yelling. There was never harmony in their home that you could recognize between mom and dad.
Oh, see, dad and mom would be saving for the dream house my mom wanted to build, and then all of a sudden Tyler run up this bill, and boom, my dad would, with my mother not knowing about it, would go pay off the bill for my sister, for his sister. Thereby, he was enabling her to keep spending more than she made. And that was a war in our house. When he did that, that war would last for weeks, because my mom would be just unbelievably furious about that, because she wanted to build this dream house.
Yeah, so I guess it goes both ways. You need to be in agreement about how much you help people. You need to be in agreement about how much you're willing help you're willing to accept from other family members or whatever. Actually, we did. Bill is really big on being debt-free, but when we were first married, we did accept a loan from my dad to buy our first house, but we paid it back really quickly. I just have tidbits here about things that I have observed about it being so important to have that agreement about how much you will have in each category. Like my mom, my dad was very frugal. I won't go into all of that, but his dad was a coal miner, and he could remember when they didn't have enough for food. He can remember eating lard sandwiches. That's all they had. So he was very frugal. And my mom she wasn't extravagant, but she liked nice, pretty things. And I can remember that she would bring something home, a new blouse or something, and she'd put it in the trunk. And she wouldn't get it out for like 2 weeks. And then my dad would say, "Is that new?" And she'd say, "Oh no, I've had it for a while." And so it's kind of humorous, but you know, that wouldn't have been so necessary if they'd had a budget for clothes, and she stuck to it. One of the couples that we mentored had this tiff about how to spend money, and it's kind of humorous how they solved it. You know, it might work for some people, might not. But Kim was a frugal one, and she thought they should definitely save money by not going out to eat. So he would sneak to go out with the guys to have lunch sometimes. So finally they decided they would have their main account together, bank account, for, you know, mortgage and insurance and food and all of that. And then she would have her separate account. Let's just pick a number, $300 a month. And he would have his separate account, $300. So they didn't have to keep spying on each other. They had their little amount that they could spend on clothes or decorations or eating out or whatever without checking on each other. So that's one way. You can let the computer be the bad guy. This is an example from one of my friends. I thought it was kind of neat that they had the spreadsheet with every category of spending, you know, insurance and whatever. And they had a category for each one of their daughters for expenses, whatever it was, the yearbook, going out with friends, clothes. And so, like one time her daughter came to her and said, Liza came to her and said, "Mom, I really need a new blouse. This event is coming up and I need some new clothes." And her mom didn't say, "No." her mom said, well, let's go to the computer. Let's look at the spreadsheet to see how much you spent. And so they go and look it up. And sure enough, she said, oh, I'm sorry, you've just got $25 left in there. This is because you spent the rest of yours for the month. So, okay, but it's there on the spreadsheet. This is how much you left. The mom doesn't have to be the bad guy. Another thing they did that I think is really neat, they had a conversation, I don't know when it started, when you have junior high kids or high school kids, they told them, we just want you to know, as far as expectations, that your dad and I have agreed that when you are 18, you are on your own. It's time to be self-sufficient. You, after you graduate from college, from high school, you can go to college and we'll help pay your main expenses, but you have to earn, get a job and earn for all the frivolous. Like if you want to be in a fraternity sorority, you need to earn the money for that. So they have that agreement. If you choose not to go to college, then you don't just lay around our house and expect us to pay you for your car and your insurance and your food. You get it at 18, you get a job if you don't go to college. So you can pay for your own car and your own insurance and your own food. Because we do know several families where, like across the pond, neighbors, we don't know what to do. Our kid has graduated, he doesn't know what to do with himself, and he just lays around, he gets up at 11. And I'm thinking, look, he's being fed, he has a bed to sleep in, naturally he's not motivated to get out. We do know one family that she had this dilemma of the kids just staying home on the couch, eating potato chips, and she was a single mom, and McCool came over and said, I'll help you with that. And he came over and he said, let's pack his suitcases. And she wasn't strong enough to do this by herself. They packed the suitcases and put them out on the curb. That's a little bit drastic. So, like-minded, important.
Yeah, well, see, because my mom had this dream of building this house, whenever Suzanne came to me and talked about building her house, it resonated with me, but it was probably the worst possible time to do it because I was in the midst of starting the business. And when you start a business from nothing in your basement, you're mixing chemicals and stuff, it's a long, hard process with lots of setbacks. But I've told you that God had told me not to say no to her. So the same way I told you the story about Lisa getting her horse. So when she came to me and said that she wanted to build a house, I didn't say no, but I said, let me pray about it, let me see what I can begin. So we're gonna make it a God thing. How big is your God? So I try to make it impossible for her to build this house because I really don't want to do it. I don't want any part of it. So I said, number one, it needs to be no more than a half hour from where we are because I was really close to where my business was. I said, number two, when we finish building it, I don't want to have a mortgage. I'm in my early 40s. That's impossible. So, and I'm in debt with the business. So I said, we won't have a mortgage. And then the third thing was, and I threw this, you always have to kind of, remember I'm kind of a rough young Christian. You kind of got to appease God. So I threw in this, that if God would do this, then we would have people come over, as many as he wanted, and we would bring them into a relationship with Christ, if he would bring them to our house. And it would be open door all the time. So that's the way I threw in a God thing, and then the two conditions were, you can see right where I was. It was always bargaining with God. And I'm thinking, this is 30 minutes from where we live. No, this is in Atlanta, and all the lots are taken care of. And then the fact that we wouldn't have any mortgage, that's just totally off the wall. That was a dumb prayer. And I'm going to tell you why that was a dumb prayer as we go through this. But it has a lot to do with money. Okay, so maybe a year goes by, and I'm genuinely praying with her about this, and she comes home and she says, you'll never believe this. This real estate lady in our church had found 30 acres in the heart of Dunwoody 30 acres, and it's for sale. And the man that owned it was an IBM executive. He was very frustrated because he had a little pond on the property, and there was a lot of dope dealing going on down at his pond. He couldn't keep the people off of it. And his wife had died, he had married again. So his second wife didn't like all these dope dealers down there smoking dope. So they decided to sell it. So the developers come in, 31 acres, but the developers couldn't do anything with it. There was so much granite in the ground, they couldn't put in a sewer system. So it was going to have to be a situation where you had septic tanks, and then they couldn't put enough houses on the property. So this doctor was willing to finance it for four couples in our church. He was going to finance it with a very small down payment for 5 years, interest only. Well, I knew this was a good deal. So, because this property was really valuable where it was. So I agreed we had enough money to put our little shot into the down payment. So now we got the property. And at that moment, real estate was kind of depressed in Atlanta. But within a year, things had turned around. So we had sold we divided all the lots into 2.5 acres. You know, you can't believe this. I mean, in the heart of Dunwoody, it's a really great place to live. Each of us was going to have 2.5 acres, and we had 2 lots to sell for 2.5 acres. All right, we sold a year later those 2 lots for enough money to cover the entire loan to the doctor and put in the roads and the infrastructure. So now here I've got this land, 2.5 acres, with the road, with the infrastructure, the power and everything, and I don't have any money in it. In other words, that's free. So then Suzanne comes up to me and she says, well, now can we start building the house? Well, you know, I can't really say no. We got enough money to put it in the basement. But if you're going to put it in a basement, you have to have a plan. What you can put on top of it? So we go to some builders, and it's just way, at that time, it was $55 a foot to build a new house.
Square foot.
A square foot, you know, that's cheap today. But back then, that's what it was. So we looked at it, and we really couldn't do it. So I really quick took a course on how to build houses. I am full of confidence. I'm very cocky. That's one of my issues. So we do this course, and we get a house plan together. And then I am the contractor, so I hire the subs. We get the basement in. That's all the money we've got. Now, in the meantime, what I hadn't told you, this is the part about the dumb prayer. I didn't pray that I wouldn't be hurt, because I got hit by a tractor trailer from Georgia Pacific, fully loaded with lumber. I got T-boned at an intersection. It was a two-way stop, and the truck driver ran the two-way stop and pammed me. So I woke up in the hospital, ripped through my lung, every rib broken, collarbone broken, shoulder blade broken, and I wake up on the operating table like, what happened? You know, what happened? But the settlement that I got out of that accident paid that plus selling my house paid for the whole thing. So we literally moved in. Sometimes there weren't doorknobs on the doors, and every room was painted this off-white, which Suzanne hated.
But be careful how you pray.
Yes, I'm never going to pray. I always pray now that the Lord will exclude anybody getting hurt. But all the way through, we had a spreadsheet. So that if Suzanne wanted to do this in this room, then we went took something off here. So the whole time, we operated off of a spreadsheet because we had this amount of money.
And of course, when you move in a house, you want to decorate it. So, says, no, we can't afford to decorate this house right now, but I'll negotiate with you. We can decorate 1 room per year. Or if things weren't too good, 1 room every other year.
Yeah.
So that was the deal.
And so we spent most of our lives in this, now 30-something years in this house.
33 years.
Yeah, and it's kind of been redecorated a few times too. But always we were doing this off cash. We just didn't go and borrow money. That was my same thing in the business. The business grew very little. And the worst thing about a small business person is that, because I had to have chemicals in inventory. So the profit went into inventory. and then the profit went into accounts receivable, and then the profit went to pay the IRS, and then the profit went to pay the insurance company who was insuring the whole thing. And I was beginning to think, am I ever going to make any money? Because, you know, there's the break-even point, and we were really struggling to get to the break-even point. And when something go wrong, it was so fragile, my little house of cards was so fragile, that I would go bust. And so we had the house paid for. I told you how that happened. So Suzanne would go to the bank. It was always in her name, because I was always afraid of being sued since I had a business. So it was always in the real assets were in Suzanne's name, and all the liability was in my name. So she would go to the bank and get me a loan so I could start the business again. And then I would work really, really hard and pay off that loan. Then we'd get the house back free and clear. And then boom, something else would happen to go wrong. So we'd go back to the bank. She did this twice without ever saying one word about, why don't you go back and work for a chemical company? So she put the house in jeopardy twice, never ever saying one word of reproach to me, why didn't I do something else?
Well, we had prayed about this. We knew it was God's house. And we had promised that that house would be like a hostel. We just wanted to be open to counseling people even at that time. In fact, my mom lived with us for a little while after my father passed away. But then she moved out, so I'm going to Florida. She said, your place is like an open house. You might as well put a revolving door in instead of a front door. So God really took us at our word that he was going to use that house for his purposes. So it wasn't that hard to give that house, say, Lord, it's your house, because we had already given it to him.
Yes, he fulfilled his part by bringing people there. Just unbelievable. We would sometimes have three couples a weekend giving them dinner. Because in Atlanta, they don't have time to go home. You can't get back because of traffic. So they would come, we'd have dinner for them, and then we would counsel with them. And it was a fantastic time in our lives. This is very, very fruitful. So before I move on here, anybody have any questions about budgets, about money problems, anything anybody wanted to say? Just because we're going to give some more examples about money issues in couples we've worked with. And I just want to give you a chance to ask any questions or make some what about, what if, that kind of stuff. If you think of it, just raise your hand or something and I'll spot you and be glad to address it. Now, here's a couple comes in and we sit down and start talking to them, and she's mad at him because he is not the spiritual leader of the family. And so I say, well, I asked him, I said, do you know what a spiritual leader is? He says, oh, I don't have any idea what a spiritual leader is. And so I said, well, when did y'all start dating? Well, they start dating in college. I said, did you ever go to church? No. Did you ever talk about anything to do with God or religion? No. So this girl had gone through college with him, dated him, never mentioning that she was a believer, never mentioning that they didn't go to church. Plus, she was, her second complaint was that she didn't think they had enough money. And he was an accountant. So I asked him, I said, well, why don't you bring me a spreadsheet of where you are in your marriage? Well, this man, he had saved money. I hardly ever meet a young couple who are just out of school where they're not in debt. And here he was a positive. But the real issue came out of her past. Her father had been an alcoholic, and he had hidden money from the family, and they really didn't have money. And so the mother had dumped on this little girl, and they would actually go together. The mother would take this little girl and look for her father in bars to get him to come home. And so she had this suspicious nature built into her about the money.
Because the father never shared with the wife where they were financially.
Right. So that she, and believe it or not, this was so hard, she just could not get this out of her head. And so we always break up, and I'll counsel with the husband, and Suzanne counsels with the wife. But when he was in with me, he said, you know, she wants me to be a Christian. But if she's a Christian, she's driving me crazy, and I don't want to be a Christian. And I thought, you know, this is what you end up dealing with. And as far as we know, after a couple of years of counseling, he still has not become a Christian, and it's because of his wife. But they do, now financially, I think she's accepted the financial part, and they have their first child, just born recently. But there's a case of where somebody's background in their family of origin just caused her to distrust her husband. All right, now when you're in the fourth quarter, there's a funny thing happens to you. I don't think anybody in here is as old as we are, maybe the ref camp. But in the fourth quarter, you start getting rid of all the junk you got in the first quarters. So what you really need to focus on is you've got an attic full of stuff you don't use. And think really hard before you buy this or this or this and work so hard to buy it, because in the fourth quarter, you're going to get rid of it. And a lot of furniture and a lot of stuff that hopefully your grandchildren can take it or something, but it's got to go because it's time to downsize. You know, so I just wanted to mention that to you, that fourth quarter can be tough. We had another situation where this girl that Suzanne was discipling, the mother just kept giving her money so that she never paid attention to her credit cards, and she had well over $10,000 in debt in credit cards, and she was about to get married. And so we were working with her and with her fiance. He was very frugal, to say that he needed to watch her and she needed to tell her mother to stop giving her money, because they had to live on a budget that they both had good jobs, but because she was so used to spending, she was raised that way, she never had any worries about money, and the mother always gave her money, so she could always pay the minimum credit card, or maybe a little more on it. But she was very receptive to that, and I felt like her Christian growth really came out. And today, they are actually leading groups in a town in another state. They're leading groups, and they frequently talk about how to manage the money. And so she's gone from one extreme to the other.
It's important to be willing to change your habits.
Okay. Yes. Okay, let me start when they're young. Okay, if you have the young children.
And what do you feel comfortable showing, I guess?
All right. All right, I'll start from that end. I tried my best to get my daughters to be chemists, because I had built this business, and I wanted my daughter, and one daughter actually went to chemical engineering at Clemson for 1 year, and she did very well in it, but she said, Daddy, she said, I don't want to be a chemical engineer. And so she ended up being a nurse. So, but she tried to be some other things, like she wanted to be a large animal vet. So we got her a job with a large animal vet one summer, and at the end of that summer, she said, Dad, I don't want to be a large animal vet. And I said, well, why not? She said, well, number one, when a large animal's sick, you got to go to it. Number two, all these people that own large animals, they don't ever have any money. So they can't pay you, they pay a little bit down. So that large animal vet, this was at Clemson, never had enough money because people weren't paying her. She had plenty of business. So Lisa reckoned that's when, after the large animal vet, she wanted to be a nurse. So the point was, and this is the way I treated my daughters, is if you want to go to college, you must get a degree that will pay you more than the cost of the college. Because I was willing to give them the money to go to college and forget about going to college if they weren't going to get a job. And like one of my son's grandsons married a girl, she basically had no advice at all. Here she has a social work degree and $20,000 in debt. It's going to be extremely difficult for them to pay that off.
But how did we train our children from little on?
The girls, when they were young, they had some allowances, but that required certain chores to be done. And then they also had jobs. Like Lisa What kind of job was that? A fast food? Lisa was a total introvert. This little girl wouldn't even get on the phone and call somebody. She'd want her mama to call whoever it was. This was at 14, 15. So we got her a job at a fast food. Do you remember which one it was?
It's called Delights.
Delights. And for whatever reason, they put her outside when the cars would come in. She would be outside. And she would have to take the order and relay it inside. And she turned from an introvert to an extrovert just because she had to deal with people every day. And then she saved her money. Did we tell them about the horse story?
No, but I don't think we answered question about... We never did tell them about our finances.
We never told them about our finances.
Right or wrong.
And then when I had the two son-in-laws come along, they weren't interested in studying chemistry. And then all these 10 grandchildren, and nobody wants to be a chemist. So I sold the business. Because and they never really knew how well the business did. So that was, I never told them. I don't want money to be the reason why somebody does something. Although, remember I told you that chemical engineers made the most money when I got out of high school, and that's why I wanted to be a chemical engineer. So money was my driving force, but I never wanted to have the kids come into the business if they really didn't love the chemistry, because that was a huge part of what we do is the chemistry.
Did you talk about budgets with them and, you know, here's your budget for entertainment when they went off to college, you got X amount of money for this, things like that.
We did have some budgeting with them, but you know, when you have enough money, that is a problem for them to really. What we worked on more was their grades and in the right field, that they would be rewarded for their grades. Like, you're not going to believe we did this, but Lisa made the honor roll at Clemson almost every semester. So she had at Clemson her horse and our family boat. She had all that at Clemson, and she still was on the honor roll and had the best time of her life. She would easily tell you that Clemson was just, for me, going to college, I never had any fun. I was in these laboratories all afternoon, maybe 5 days a week. I'd go to engineering classes, chemistry classes, and go in the laboratory. I hated college. I couldn't wait to get out, because I never had any fun, never had time for fun. So, but she, just the opposite. She had so much fun, it was insane. Does that kind of answer your question a little bit? It is very hard.
I think that we didn't do as good a job as we could have training kids about money at a young age. I would actually like to hear some opinions from some of you of how you're handling that. Do you do allowance? Do you only give allowance if they perform well in school? How are you handling it?
One thing we did was we did share that we lived on a budget with our sons, and we showed them the budget. And one time, I remember Cameron, I don't know how old he was, maybe 9 or 10, and they asked to go out to eat after a ball game or something. And we didn't say yes right away. First of the month, we got more money in the budget. So they kind of understood what the budget was. And so I think it was good to share with them that we had a budget, we had different amounts every month. Not every month, but we had for different categories that we worked off of. So they seemed kind of catchy.
Do you ever
get
one back? Your own personal bank?
When they were probably 16 and were working, we did open up a bank account prior to our bank account system, and then their money, because most of it, when they're paid now, they do have their own money.
You want to share the Jason's story?
They have their accounts, and they were responsible for what they had budgeted and seeing what they could spend.
So we've got a crown registry. There's a crown registry for the kids. We did that with our daughters. I thought it would be unbelievable effect. And then we opened up checking accounts for them, so you know, all kind of spreadsheets. They were fascinating. The real world business. They were fascinating. So we did competition for kids, and I did it with my wife. And I did it with them. They wanted to talk about just God's principles of love. We need to start that really early. I thought that would be a very effective tool.
Everybody hear that?
Well, folks, I mean, we did competition for kids, and so we did do the Because they had seen us doing it with other families and modeling that, and then we had our whole budget, so that they could see what we were doing. We set it up for them, we set up individual accounts for them.
That sounds like a great idea.
I love that idea. I wish we had done that. We didn't know about it.
I think that is so important. We don't have to, because kids that I've hired for our business, they have to check. They don't know what to do. You know, is everything done by
the advertiser, by credit cards?
And I've been these, I've been doing nothing about money, and I've had to train for it, and I don't.
Right.
To learn about my budget.
So our youngest daughter's a senior in UT, and she has to present some budget every year, on what she's going to do, and she asks, and so we fund her, but she has to present the budget on exactly where everything goes, and then she has to, she reconciles every month with her, and so, yeah, they have a real understanding of money.
So Tom, for those of you in the back, Tom is saying 5 minutes. That his daughter is in college, but she has accountability, that she has to present her budget to dad every month?
What's the paper that she puts together for the year?
For the year.
For the year.
She's got to reconcile it. She works with Charlotte. She's got to reconcile it. She says, okay, she's got to present every single month. They're both super frugal. But it's, she has to present it and reconcile.
Yeah.
So it's like doing our own business.
Yep.
It's like they're used to that because they know we're business, so it's like, hey, you want to you got to come and tell us.
Right.
What age is this family?
I think we started with maybe like 11 or 12, you know, they're all year
old. We'll be telling. We'll both tell it.
It's Crown Ministry for Kids. It's God's Ministry for Mom. It's really good for them.
I love that example. If we could start off parenting, we would have done that. All right.
Let me finish with this story about Jason, my nephew.
And teaching the value of money when kids are not motivated.
Yeah. I won't go into why my brother divorced his wife, but Jason, who was around 16, went on strike. He quit doing his work at school. He was mad that they were divorcing, and so he wasn't going to do anything at school. He did the minimum, barely squeaked through that grade that year. And my brother was just desperate about what was going to happen to him. So I said, well, let Jason, he just learned to drive. I said, let him come over to Atlanta. We'll let him drive some in Atlanta. He'd go with me on my business trips. And so Jason would go, and I would be talking to customers, and Jason would be in there with me talking to customers and seeing how you run a business. And then after I did that for a while, he loved the driving for me, and I loved him driving for me. Then I would drive by a house, and I'd say, Jason, how much do you think it costs to own that house? So he would come up with some number, and I would tell him what it really cost to own that house. And I said, how much money do you think you have to make to be able to buy that house?
And to pay the mortgage.
And to pay the mortgage. And so he would come up with some numbers, and because at this point, all he'd ever done was bag groceries. So then I said, well, Jason, what car would you like to have whenever you're leaving home? What kind of car would you like to drive? He'd point out this or that. Well, how much money do you think it would take to be able to buy that car? How much have you got to make? So that summer, we went through this kind of programming with him, me writing down numbers for him and going through what he'd have to earn. So Jason changed. By the end of that summer, he went back to school, got good grades, went on to the University of South Carolina, got a civil engineering degree, works for the state in the water department system. And I think that was a turning point. And the turning point for our daughter was working at the fast food place, taking those orders. It was just a turn. Every kid needs a turning point, and I really like the kids working in the fast food places as soon as they can. I think we've had a granddaughter.
Or any job.
Or any job, but a fast food place, and of course cutting the lawns for the guys is really good to go out and cut grass for your neighbors. I think all that is a great thing to do too. But one thing about young kids, and I'll quit, is that don't let young kids be the king and queen of your house. As we see the parents have come subservient to their kids. And the kids need, every chance they get when they're little, they need to serve their parents. It's whatever it looks like, get me this or get me that, give them a star, give them accolades, but let them serve you. Because the idea that the kids are just the king and queen and running the show is so prevalent today. We see it everywhere. We see kids 6, 7, 8 that are spoiled beyond anything we ever dreamed we'd ever see.
and haven't had to learn how to budget.
No budget.
We better stop.